Accession number 11928, Rule 4.
Mr. Ian Fraser, Rule 4.
And we sailed in, and the ships were there, and I've never seen so many heavy or capital ships in my life in one place. And it was there was the KG5, and there was the Duke of York, the Anson, to name but a few. There was the Ulster Queen, which was an ex-banana boat, fast banana boat, which had been turned into an Akak ship. There was the Ulster Queen, which was the ex-Strand to Stranraer to Larne ferry, and she'd been turned into an Akak ship. In other words, they just took all, and just loaded her with guns, and she was a flagship, and that was it. And that was what they were for. They really were loaded with guns. And there weren't many smaller ships in, because destroyers normally, it was not their wont to hang about long. They were here, there, everywhere, where a capital ship could lie there and take a lot of stores on, and you know, so that was that. And then we there were various parties on board the ship. I went to one on the 6th of September, which was a Sunday, by the way, and we had a good time on board there. The Ulster Queen, which I mentioned, sailors are notorious for their nosiness. And these guys are loading some small boxes on the Ulster Queen, and one of them, don't know what happened, but it dropped, and some gold bars fell out of it as well. So then the whole fleet knew we were taking gold to Russia, or presumed Russia. I mean, this was it, we were taking gold bars somewhere, because if the rest of the boxes contained gold and one drop, that was it. So that was something. A sailor can find out quite easily what's in a box, just drop it and find out. And that's very, very true. We were taking gold to Stalin, one of the things we were taking. And then the actual on the 6th, the actual watches started, as far as I was concerned, for WT. For about 3 days we'd been coaling ship. We were coal burning trawler, and they filled the bunkers tightly packed, and they started to take a deck load on. Now the gunwale of a trawler is about waist high, or almost chest high to an average man, so you're looking at something like 4 feet 6 from the deck to the top. Now imagine that all around the ship, you've got quite a few tons of coal there. And of course, if there'd been any heavy seas, we'd have lost most of that. But when we sailed on the 7th, there wasn't really. We sailed at 7 in the morning. We took it that we were going to Russia, because the evening before, two Russian naval officers come aboard us to take passage to Archangel. So it was pretty certain, with the deck load of coal, two Russian naval officers. Although I knew we were supposed to go to Russia, nothing was certain in the Navy. But anyway, we left with these ships, and the main thing was that we had with us we had eight merchantmen, and three of them were Russians, mainly Stalingrad. Now she was to figure later on in the story, but there was the Marty Komeles and the Petrovsky and the Thetisi and the Stalingrad, Sukhona, all about the same size, all about 6,000-7,000 tons. and we started heading north through Denmark Strait, and gradually the ships appeared. There'd been some up in Cedisfjord, there'd been some in we came from Valfjord in the south, Cedisfjord is in the north, Akureyri is another place in the north. They all round Iceland they came from. Some came from Loch Hugh themselves at different speeds, and we all formed up, and finally we finished up with 40 merchantmen and about 75 escorts for this one convoy. In other words, they'd learnt the lesson from PQ-17, but only a certain number of those escorts were close escorts. In other words, the big ships we never saw again. They just disappeared over the horizon, mainly on our starboard side, in between Norway and the convoy, because we did expect to be attacked by their main fleet. The Tirpitz were still active, and one or two ships, their big fleet, was still about. So gradually the convoy formed up as it went along. We had Billy Burnett join us in the Scylla, which was his flagship and the flagship of the convoy for that time. And we kept getting various reports. There was one occasion when a plane came out of the clouds, and everybody opened up at him, because everybody was very, very trigger happy. Don't forget, very, very tense. We'd been at this for several days and nothing had happened. There were loads of reports coming in by RT, by All Islam, by all means, flags. That submarines were around and aircraft were seen. This chap came out the clouds and everybody opened up. Turned out he was an RAF liberator. He was not very happy. They got very smartly out of range and sent a very nasty message by All Islam to the senior officer present, saying that from then on we could do without his help. He was going back to Iceland to get patched up, and that was the end of our escort airwise. And on the 12th day we transferred our two passengers to the Empire Morn. Now the Empire Morn was one of the few ships which the Admiralty plus the Coastal Command plus the RAF had come up with, and they rigged a short runway of lattice steel on the bow between the main mast, the foremast I should say, and the bow, something about not very long, and it was armed with a steam catapult. Obviously superheated steam, and it shot off a hurricane. That was the theory anyway, and this hurricane sat there until the senior officer decided it should be flown off, because obviously once it was flown off, that was it. He either made land or he went in the sea and he rescued the pilot, but he just had to sit there and wait for orders. So the two guys were always kitted up. These two chaps on the hurricane. I think in the end, when it went off, there was only the pilot on board, because as I recall, some of the hurricanes carried two and the others just carried one. Anyway, that's that. We transferred our passengers to this Empire Morn, and on the next morning, the 13th, terrific reports of what was going to happen, what wasn't going to happen, and we had a Jew on board us. Now he's the only Jew I've ever met in the Navy, this guy, a chap the name of Goldsworthy, who came from Swansea. Marvellous man, marvellous friend, good, very, very good seaman, and a great chap, all round guy, mixed with the boys, the fun, you know, and all the rest of it. And I was there were only two of us on the mess deck, and we were discussing our chances of getting through and what might happen, what might not, and there was two loud thuds. The alarm bells rang and two of us dashed on deck, I looked at my watch, the time was precisely 09:01. And there on the stab, on the port side, I should say, was two ships going down. One was the Stalingrad, and the other was a US ship, and both being torpedoed, and that was the start of it. And that was at 09:01 in the morning, and from then on, I mean, my story is mostly about what went on personally. But I can assure you all this has been written up elsewhere. The times, it was just all hell let loose. I went on watch in my usual action station position in the wireless office, and it was nobody knew exactly what was happening. There was a couple of ships sinking, everybody was firing, there were U-boats on the surface, and then it became quiet again, and I went off watch. The alarms, when I say the off watch, it was off watch literally from the wireless office, but we were never really off watch. Although we weren't at action station, we were loosely closed up. In other words, we were ready for instant action, although we weren't at action stations, because obviously it was going to be pretty hot this trip. And another friend of mine on board was a chap named Harry Corlett, who was the Orlikon gunner, and we were all sort of, those three or four of us plus the crew, just chatting away on it. Felt it better to be up topsides than down below, actually, to be quite honest with you. It's a nicer feeling. See what's coming and see what's going on. And somebody said, look at those buzz on the horizon. One of the haddos said, them's not effing birds, them's effing planes. And we had a look. Somebody said, oh, Christ, and very mad dash everywhere, bells going, and a sight like this apparently had never been seen before. There were something like 50 planes wing to wing at deck level, absolutely 0 feet approaching the convoy. And I will never forget that sight. Nobody had seen it before in history, except the people on this convoy then, because not that number of planes had ever been in the air at one time, not in that configuration, all wing to wing and at sea level. And the idea is, of course, they would be under the arc of the gunfire deflection, for one, so they were pretty safe from that, because they were flying under it, because guns can only depress, as you appreciate, to a certain elevation. They go up all right, but not down, so they came in all right. It was fairly calm, they were okay. And there's various reports on them, but I honestly think that when every ship opened up, particularly the merchantmen, they did more damage to their own ships than those planes did, and they sunk quite a few ships on that was the first attack.
You mean the merchantmen sank some of the convoy?
Didn't actually sink them. They caused more injuries to the crew of their own ships than the actual gunfire from the planes did. Well, let's say the ships did a lot of damage. I'm not referring to naval ships; they were disciplined. That the merchant crew were not disciplined to the extent that naval gunners were, so they opened a fire at anything. I mean, it doesn't matter what it was. It didn't matter. Another ship was in line of sight. They had to fire. Then this went on. I should add here that each of these planes, these Heinkel 111s, were carrying two torpedoes each, and there was no doubt they were destined for the convoy. And of course they were fitted with machine guns as well, so usual aircraft armament. And quite a funny thing happened, because obviously the amount of logging I had to do while I was on watch was quite tremendous, and some of it was interesting, some of it was routine. But a very funny thing did happen. The bridge asked me to report to the senior officer that we were being attacked by an enemy aircraft. Now, each of the ships in the convoy had a call sign for RT purposes only, which was they were mainly birds. Ours was Plover, the Cape Argona. The senior officer, he was Eagle. So the bridge told me to send a signal to say that we were being attacked by enemy aircraft. Mind you, we're surrounded about 80, 90, 100 of the darn things. This is the laugh afterwards, not at the time, but on reflection. So I sent a message, Plover from Eagle, Plover to Eagle, I'm being attacked by enemy aircraft. The reply, Plover from Eagle, Roger. Finished. That was his answer to me. I've received your message, Roger. Don't know anything more about it. I mean, obviously, everybody was being attacked. I don't know who. I don't think it was the captain who ordered me to send that. It was just somebody on the bridge, and perhaps the subby or something thought we'd better get in the action. I don't know, but that's quite true. I mean, Plover to Eagle, I'm being attacked by enemy aircraft. Eagle to Plover, Roger. Brevity in the Navy. That's it. They didn't want to know. Quite right from his point of view. And then they were so all around us. I've never seen any planes like it. The bridge would be about, let me think, the wireless office would be about, what, 30 feet, maybe 25 from water level, feet above sea level. I looked out the porthole. I'm looking down on the top of the head of one of these Junkers Heinkel 111's pilot. I'm looking at his leather flying helmet, looking down at it. He's so low. Sort of things you never forget. Little things like that. You look out at port, and there's the leather, and the gun fired at him as he went past, and we claimed we shot him down, but he was never credited with us.
But it was actually shot down, was it?
Oh yes, I think he got frightened and lost control, and he sheared a bit, and they picked him off. But then they cleared off for a bit, and we were, one of our jobs was coffin ship. I must explain coffin ship. The coffin ship was a ship who did all the normal duties, convoy duties, but it also had to pick up survivors, hence the name coffin ship. You just you always the last ship in the convoy for that reason. And by the time you pick the survivors up, you're even you were further after the convoy, and then of course you had to pick up all speed to regain them. Sometimes it would take 2 hours to catch up with the convoy, and at that time you were open to attack by any aircraft that was about, seeing you alone on your own. One very interesting thing, though, I painted them, sketched them afterwards. Because go back to the painting. Don't forget, while the actual action was on, it wasn't done at that time. I'd be too busy with the messages. But immediately after the action, I stopped within say 5 or 10 minutes. Then I got on with it. Anyway, we came, the captain said to pick up survivors. We came to this raft with four on it, and there were four Yanks, and one of them shouted, hey you guys, we're on a raft, we're okay, you go and pick up our buddies in the water. And that was what went on at sea. I mean, they got a raft, they were all right for the moment, go and pick the guys up out of the water, which we did. And as far as I know, those guys on the raft never got picked up at all, because the convoy was going on. Well, that was the sort of the comradeship of war. I mean, when it comes out in its best sort of how can you put it? It comes out at its best anyway, under conditions of severe stress. Don't bother about us, we've got a raft, pick up our buddies. And we had a Canadian seaman on board, and he, during this operation, picking up the survivors, he dived overboard. Immediately he got back on board, he was charged with deserting ship. Now, in the as they were then, the King's Instructions and Admiralty Regulations, the KINAR, which you're probably acquainted with or heard of, there is, and I never knew it until then, there is a clause to cover this, because on another ship a sub-lieutenant had done the same thing, and he was charged with deserting ship, hazarding the ship, this as long as your arm in between, and then the final, I think the final indignity was breaking into ship when he returned. In other words, picked up out of the water, but he was still charged with breaking into ship, and it was a big court-martial over that one. And this chappy was charged under the same sort of thing, hazarding the ship.
How long was he in the water for?
He was swimming around, helping to round up the survivors in the water. He'd been there about an hour. He was this French-Canadian, fit as a fiddle, great swimmer. And all he was doing, he wasn't going to go anywhere, it was desert, was he, in the middle of the Barents Sea. But that was the routine. He was charged with it, but just to stop anybody else diving over, I suppose. Nothing was heard of it on our ship, but I do know that this sub lieutenant did get a court martial on one of the big ships through that.
It's a wonder he survived so long in such cold.
It was. Don't forget, we're only on September the 13th then, and it wasn't really cold. Not then. The cold came later. And then, of course, food started to go short. We, being a small ship, we could only carry so much fresh food, and bread had to be rationed. Now, well, there were 13 of us on our mess. We had three telegraphists, three ASDIC operators, three signalmen, the sick bay attendant. We didn't carry a doctor, we just carried a sick bay attendant, because nobody else would have him. And we got two others from somewhere, and that made up 13. And we were allowed, the cook said he could only allow 12 to 13 chaps, two-pound loaves per 24 hours at that time. The thing was, how do you share out two-pound loaves in 24 hours between 13 men? And somebody had the bright idea, might have been me, it might have been somebody else, I don't know. We take it in turns to cut these loaves, and the chap that cut the loaf, as a perk, got the crumbs, because they were very valuable. We were literally hungry, and it was new bread, so I can imagine there were quite a lot of crumbs. But to see the eyes watching you cut, and the loaves weren't nice and square or anything like that, they were sort of round, had risen out the tin and that sort of thing. And that was one thing I always remember about hunger, the way the eyes were watching you. They're just watching to see you cut everybody's slice right. It's one of those things. I don't know how other ships did it, that's how we did it. I don't know how other messes on the ship did it, but I know we did it, so that was it. But it was a frightening thought to think that if you slipped up and gave somebody the wrong slice, because you had to hand it out as well, and they had to judge the thinner end to make that a bit thicker. it was one of those things. Then on the one of the days, on the 16th in particular, the destroyer Somali, one of the fast escorts, one of the big ones, the tribal class, Billy Burnett, or Bob Burnett as he was known as, the rear admiral, decided to send her home because, getting short on fuel, they'd refuelled in Spitsbergen, but it wasn't a good idea to send her in there again. Get her home with all the survivors we got up to now. And he came alongside us. We transferred our survivors, and we had four of them we'd picked up. One of them had been torpedoed then four times already. He was an American. Four times he'd been torpedoed, and we transferred him to Somali. The captain said, "I want all your depth charges to our skipper." There was a shouting match went on from bridge to bridge, and I don't know how they resolved it, but I do know he went away happy, and we kept some depth charges. But meanwhile, while this was going on, this transfer of the survivors, we hadn't got to the depth charges yet, there was an alarm bell went, a major alarm over the convoy, and this guy, this mad destroyer skipper, we're tied up alongside, he took off at full speed with us tied up alongside him. Well, somehow we managed to cut ourselves loose, but you can imagine a trawler tied up to, you know, a really big destroyer, one of the biggest classes we got, the tribal class. And with his full speed, you know, you're looking at 30 knots when he takes off. I mean, not from dead start, but we soon got rid of him. He came back, and that's when he demanded the depth charges. But that's another of those funny things that on the 17th, the first sign we'd seen of any Russian help, we got two destroyers. They joined us, and we were quite grateful for their help, because see, they not only Somali had gone back, but Bob Burnett on the Scylla had gone back as well, and we were very, very depleted with we'd only got destroyers and was the two Akak ships, of course, the Ulster Queen and Allen Bank. They were still with us, but we were glad of these two to see these two Russians. They sort of took station either side of us and port and starboard on, were quite a help. On the 18th, then the Empire Morn's captain decided it was time he did something about it, because the Avenger, which I hadn't mentioned prior, the Avenger was an escort carrier, and an escort carrier is a type, well, they could call them Woolworth carrier, actually. They're made mostly in Canada and the States, and they chopped the top off, the superstructure off of a merchant ship, and built a flat top on it. So obviously they were quite small, but very, very useful. And ours, the Avenger, had stored fish and sea hurricanes on board, about 12 altogether, but you can imagine they're very, very useful. But of course, when she'd gone back, that was it. It was only a matter of time before the Empire Morn sent off her fighter. Well, this I was actually watching when he took off. There were Junkers 88s up top. He took off on this short takeoff, then his engines took over, and well, his engines were revved up anyway, you know what I mean. But he was assisted by this power takeoff. He shot straight up, rolled over on his belly, on his back I should say, and fired at the bellies of the Junkers 88s above him. He shot about three down straight away, because they knew that we'd got no planes, didn't they? They saw the aircraft carrier go back. But there was one plane, that was the one off the Empire Morn.